When they returned to Huis Brabant, she did not see him again for several weeks. She heard Stals telling Elise that Meunier had gone to Paris on business. However, the brief incident on shipboard was never far from her mind. Sometimes she woke in the night and lay awake, burning with shame and remorse as she relived it. She felt that what had happened was her fault. A great man like Meunier van Ritter's surely could not be to blame. When she thought about it, her nipples burned and itched strangely. She felt a great evil in her and climbed out of her bed to kneel and pray, shivering on the bare wooden floor. Gertruda called out in the dark, "Louisa, I need the chamber pot." With a sense of relief, Louisa went to her before she could wet the bed. Over the following weeks, the guilt faded, but never quite left her. Then, one afternoon, Stals came to find her in the nursery. "Meneer van Ritters wants to see you. You must go at once. I hope you have not done anything wrong, girl." As Louisa brushed her hair hurriedly, she told Gertruda where she was going. "Can I come with you? You must finish painting the picture of the boat for me. Try to stay inside the lines, my scut. I will be back soon." She knocked on the door of the library, her heart racing wildly. She knew he was going to punish her for what had happened on the ship. He might have her beaten by the grooms, like they had done to the drunken nursemaid. Worse still, he might dismiss her, have her thrown out into the street. "Come in." His voice was stern. She curtsied in the doorway.
"You sent for me, Meunier?"
"Yes, come in, Louisa." She stopped in front of his desk, but he gestured for her to come round and stand beside him. "I want to talk to you about my daughter." Instead of his usual black coat and lace collar, he wore a dressing robe of heavy Chinese silk that buttoned up the front. From this informal attire and his calm, friendly expression, she realized he was not angry with her. She felt a rush of relief. He was not going to punish her. His next words confirmed this. "I was thinking that it might be time for Gertruda to begin riding lessons. You are a good horsewoman. I have seen you helping the grooms to exercise the horses. I want to hear your opinion."
Yes, Meunier, I'm sure Gertie would love it. Old Bumble is a gentle gelding."
Happily, she started to help him develop the plan. She was standing close to his shoulder. A thick book with a green leather cover was lying on the desk in front of him. Casually, he opened it. She could not avoid seeing the exposed page, and her voice trailed away. She lifted both hands to her mouth as she looked at the illustration that filled the whole of one folio-sized page. It was obviously the work of a skilled artist. The man in the painting was young and handsome. He lolled back in a leather armchair. A pretty young girl stood in front of him laughing, and Louisa saw that she might have been her own twin. The girl's large, wide-set eyes were cerulean blue, and she was holding her skirts up to her waist so that the man could see the golden nest between her thighs. The artist had emphasized the pair of swollen lips that pouted at him through the curls. That was enough to stop her breath. But there was worse, far worse. The front flap of the man's breeches was undone, and through the opening thrust a pale shaft with a pink head. The man was holding it lightly between his fingers and seemed to be aiming it at the girl's rosy opening. Louisa had never seen a man naked. Even though she had listened to the other girls in the servants' quarters discussing it with gusto, she had not expected anything remotely like this. She stared at it in dreadful fascination, unable to tear her eyes away. She felt hot waves of blood rising up her throat and flooding her cheeks. She was consumed with shame and horror. "I thought the girl looked like you, although not as pretty," said van Ritters quietly. "Don't you agree, my dear?"
I don't know," she whispered,
her legs almost folded under her, as she felt Meunier van Ritter's hand settle lightly on her bottom. The touch seemed to burn her flesh through the petticoats. He cupped her small, round buttock, and she knew she should ask him to stop or run from the room. But she could not. Stals and Elise had warned her repeatedly that she must obey Meunier always. She stood paralyzed. She belonged to him like any of his horses or dogs. She was one of his chattels.
She must submit to him without protest, even though she was not sure what he was doing, what he wanted from her. Of course, Rembrandt has taken some artistic license when it comes to dimensions. She could not believe that the artist who had painted the figure of God had also painted this picture. Yet it was possible. Even a famous artist must do what the great man required of him. "Forgive me, gentle Jesus," she prayed, and shut her eyes tightly so that she did not have to look at that wicked picture. She heard the rustle of stiff silk brocade, and he said, "There, Louisa, this is what it really looks like." Her eyelids were clenched tightly, and he ran his hand over her buttock, gently but insistently. "You are a big girl now, Louisa. It is time you knew these things. Open your eyes, my dear." Obediently, she opened them a crack. She saw that he had undone the front of his robe, and that he wore nothing under it. She stared at the thing that stood proud through the folds of silk. The painting was a bland and romanticized representation of it. It rose massively from a nest of coarse dark hair and seemed as thick as her wrist. The head was not an insipid pink, as in the painting, but the colour of a ripe plum. The slit in the end of it glared at her like a cyclopean eye. She shut her eyes again tightly. "Gertruda," she whispered. I promised to take her for a walk." "You are very good to her, Louisa." His voice had a strange, husky edge to it that she had never heard before. "But now you must be good to me also." He reached down and under her skirts, then ran his fingers up her naked legs. He lingered at the soft dimples at the back of her knees, and she trembled more violently. His touch was caressing and strangely reassuring. But she knew it was wrong. She was confused by these contrary emotions, and she felt as though she was suffocating. His fingers left the soft back of her knees and moved up her thigh. The touch was neither furtive nor hesitant, but authoritative, not something she could deny or oppose. "You must be good to me," he had said, and she knew that he had every right to ask that of her. She owed him everything. If this was being good to him, then she had no choice. Yet she knew it was wicked, and that Jesus would punish her. Perhaps he would cease to love her for what they were doing. She heard the rustle of the page as he turned it with his free hand, and then he said, "Look." She tried to resist him in this at least, and shut her eyes again. His touch became more demanding, and his hand moved up to the crease where her buttock joined the back of her thigh. She opened her eyes just a fraction and looked through her lashes at the fresh page of the book. Then her eyes flew wide open. The girl who looked so like her was kneeling in front of her swain. Her skirts had hiked up behind her, and her exposed bottom was round and buttery. Both she and the boy were gazing down into his lap. The girl's expression was fond, as though she were looking down at a beloved pet, a kitten, perhaps. She held it clasped in both her small hands, but her dainty fingers were not able to encompass its girth. "Is it not a beautiful picture?" he asked. And despite the wickedness of the subject, she felt a strange empathy towards the young couple. They were smiling, and it seemed as though they loved each other and were enjoying what they were doing. She forgot to close her eyes again. "You see, Louisa, that God has made men and women differently. On their own they are incomplete, but together they make a whole." She was not sure exactly what he meant, but sometimes she had not understood what her father had told her or the sermon preached by the Domine. That is why the couple in the painting are so happy, and why you can see that they feel full of love for each other. With gentle authority his fingers moved between her legs, right up to the juncture of her thighs. Then he did something else to her there. She was not sure what it was, but she moved her feet apart so he could do it more easily. The sensation that overtook her was beyond anything she had experienced before. She could feel the happiness and love he had spoken about spreading out and suffusing her entire body. She stared down again into the opening of his robe, and her feelings of shock and fear faded. She saw that, like the picture in the book, it was really quite pleasing. No wonder the other girl looked at it like that. He moved her gently, and she was pliant and unresisting. Still sitting in the chair, he turned towards her, and at the same time drew her closer and placed one hand on her shoulder. She understood instinctively that he wanted her to do what the girl in the picture was doing. Under the pressure of the hand on her shoulder, she sank down to her knees, and that strangely ugly, beautiful thing that was only inches from her face. Like the other girl, she reached out and took it in her hands. She made a small grunting sound, and she felt how hot and hard it was. It fascinated her. She squeezed gently, and felt a leap of life, as though this thing had a separate existence. It belonged to her, and she felt a strange sense of power, as though she held the core of his being in her hands. He reached down and placed his own hands over hers. He began to move them back and forth. At first she was not sure what he was doing, then understood that he was showing her what he wanted. She felt a strong desire to please him, and she learned quickly. While she moved her fingers as rapidly as a weaver working at the loom, he lay back in the chair and groaned. She thought she had hurt him, and she tried to stand up, but he stopped her with the hand on her shoulder again, and a desperate tone in his voice said, "No, Louisa, just like that. Don't stop what you're doing. Oh, you're such a good, clever girl." Suddenly he let out a deep, shuddering sigh, and whipped a scarlet silk kerchief out of the pocket of his robe, covering his lap and both her hands with it. She did not want to let go of him, even when she felt a hot, viscous fluid pouring over her hands and soaking the silk cloth. When she tried to keep on with what she was doing, he grasped her wrists and held her hand still. "That's enough, my dear. You have made me very happy." After a long time he roused himself. He took her little hands one at a time and wiped them clean with the silk cloth. She felt no sense of revulsion. He was smiling at her kindly, and he told her, "I am very pleased with you, but you must not tell anyone what we did today. Do you understand, Louisa?" She nodded vehemently. The guilt had evaporated, and she felt instead gratitude and reverence. "Now you can go back to Gertruda. We will begin her riding lessons tomorrow. Of course, you will take her to the academy."